And we're ready to rock and roll, and welcome to the Hub Wisdom Center. Our call is the fifth in a series of calls on doing spiritual business as opposed to business as usual. And just to review, we have some new folks in the room who haven't been on the call. So just to review where we've been talking about the greatest atrocity done to human beings down through the ages, and that is that we've had hidden from us, and we've bought into the idea that we're not creators, that somebody else could possibly cause something to happen in our lives. And that is a great atrocity, and we've been addressing that over the weeks on how to deal with that. And then we went into genetic healing, healing the patterns that come from our bloodlines. And for those who are on the call here, we had a wonderful presentation this morning by a man named Dr. Beck, who looked at different styles of thinking and perceiving the world, and went through one of the reasons for a lot of conflicts is because some people are, in essence, functioning from survival, some functioning from egotism, and he went through a whole series of things. It was very powerful, and in the language we've been talking about in the last couple of weeks, the last 4 weeks, we could see easily that those patterns oftentimes are genetic, that literally we inherit. You know, people don't have any problem thinking in terms of inheriting the color of their eyes or the color of their hair, but they seem to have a challenge with inheriting a thought or a feeling, when in fact, in nature, they are identical. All they are frequencies. The only difference between a thought and a feeling and the color of your eyes is the frequency or the vibration of that particular energy. And so being energetic beings, we want to be looking at the patterns that we've inherited, that we've come by honestly, and that can sometimes be a challenge to get out of. We refer to those patterns and the source of those patterns as carbon-based memory. For those who are new to the call, we asked a question in our opening session, how many have ever held a newborn child? And then asked people to describe the essence of that newborn in a single word. And we got words like love and beauty and awesome and purity, really a wonderful list of words. And of the tens of thousands of people we've asked that question of over the years, what we find is 100% of the time, the words that describe the newborn are always some variation on the theme of love. And then we asked how many have ever done something you regret. So those who are in our audience now, if you haven't been on the call, how many have done something that you regret in your life? And if you would, think about a particular single circumstance where you did something that today you regret having done it. And as you think about that circumstance, identify what you were feeling when you did whatever it was that you did and put a word to it. And because of our limitation with the sound system and such, I'll just offer that this question, too, has been asked of tens of thousands of people, and 100% of the time, the answer is always some variation on the theme of hostility or fear. Our point being that any form of hostility or fear in the human organism means that we're functioning out of corrupt data and that our mind is lying to us. First order of business. If there's hostility or fear in your mind, get restored to love, your original being, the essence that you were as a newborn before you do any form of behavior. And if you don't do that, then you'll function out of that genetic memory. You'll function out of, as I say, carbon-based memory. And we defined the difference between being and carbon-based memory. When you look at the fact that everybody describes the newborn as love, that's the essential nature of the human being. When you recognize that love is your essential nature as a human being, if love isn't present, you don't have human life present. And so we either function out of that, and in another language, we've integrated this a little bit, in another language in the ancient scriptures, they talked about the first law was love. And the idea of that law is not a legalistic idea. It's just saying the only place that you're sane, the only place you really have choice, is when you're functioning out of your human beingness. And that was called living in the mind of Christ in that particular conceptual framework. And of course, if there's living in what was called the mind of Christ is living in love, then what would be the opposite of the mind of Christ? And we arrived at our earlier conference calls is that would obviously be the anti-Christ, which everybody's been set to looking somewhere out there in the world for the enemy and whoever the problem is. And once you recognize what it really means, you start to look at where the real problem is. Wherever the sound's coming from, can we hush it down? Can we shut that off? Thank you. So we've got living in the mind of love, or what was called the mind of Christ, and then that which goes against it or takes us out of love. And we've offered the thought that that is living in carbon-based memory. And if you ask a physiologist what your so-called body is made of, they'll tell you that the base element of your body is carbon. Does anybody here know the atomic number of carbon? The atomic number of carbon is 6. In each carbon atom, there are 6 electrons, 6 protons, and 6 neutrons. Does anybody recognize that number? That's where the problem is. It's not outside of us. And in the ancient Aramaic language, there was a statement that was made that said, "You must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother." For almost 2,000 years in the West, we functioned in ignorance of what the word heart meant. A few decades ago, the unconscious was rediscovered in the West. And what we now know is that what was being said is you must remove or excise from your unconscious, from your heart, that which you want to blame on your brother and pretend you are not the creator of. And in so doing, you get to reclaim your creatorship. The process in Aramaic, the original language of those scriptures, was called forgiveness. In our culture, we've been taught a Greek idea. You did something terrible and awful that has caused all this pain in me. Of course, it's all your fault, but I'll be big about it. I'll forgive you. Which, of course, does nothing to address the source of your pain. In the Aramaic language, you would never be invited to forgive another. Stop forgiving others. Please, please. You would never be invited to forgive yourself for anything. Please, never forgive yourself. In the Aramaic, you'd be handed a tool called forgiveness with which you addressed the source of your pain. And if you never acquire that tool, then you'll be living out the title of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Because as a creator, you get to play out whatever is in your heart. And remember, in Aramaic, that word heart means the unconscious. And so what we're going to do today is specifically look at the forgiveness process. And everyone's been handed a forgiveness, a reality management sheet, which is the forgiveness process from the Aramaic. This is a 2,000-year-old technology that was disappeared almost immediately after it was introduced. And we were taught to go around forgiving each other for the content of our own carbon-based memory and the fact that that content caused us pain. And so the first question on the worksheet is, if they're the one, by the way, if you're on the call and you don't have the worksheet in front of you, if you would go to the website, www.whyagain.com, whyagain.com, and on the right-hand side, you'll see a thing that says download worksheet. You can go and catch that worksheet while we're doing the call. So the first thought on the sheet is, if they're the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? If it's all their fault, how could I possibly have pain about something that's about them? I, in fact, can only have a problem with something that's about me. And if you'll notice if you've been through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the only one that was there every time. Your painful reality is about you. They're not about anybody else. And so our premise, if you look at the top of the worksheet, is that our essential nature as human beings is love. Think newborn. The work of healing is to remove anything that is unlike our essential nature so that we can come back to the experience of love 24/7, 365, to live out of being. And for those who were here for Dr. Beck's presentation, that would be the highest level on the chart. There's where being is. Everything else is a program in carbon-based memory. Everything below that top echelon that he pointed out, the survival stuff, the tribal stuff, the ego-centered stuff, the money-making stuff, the press for success, is all carbon-based memory-driven. What we're looking to do with this body of work called Why Is This Happening to Me Again is to awaken and empower being. What Hub is about, as I see it in the world, is it's the first time in all of human history that a vision based in love has come forward and is going to be receiving the funding that is going to transform the planet into that highest echelon. So we're definitely on the right track with what we're involved in here with Hub. And so we're going to invite each of you, whether you're here in the room or on the phone, to think about a situation where you have some upset. Now, some people want to start with their big major life issue. Whole new tool, whole new skill, but they're going to work on the big stuff. Well, that's like handing a 10-year-old girl who wants to learn to play baseball a baseball bat and putting her in front of the pitcher for the New York Yankees. It's not going to happen. And so what I request that you do, and just fill in the first blank with the name of someone that you have a small issue with, a small irritation or a small upset. Please don't start with the big leagues. Now, whenever I do this workshop, I always get somebody that comes up afterward, you know, well, I had a problem with my mother-in-law for 40 years, and it's like, this is a little one? Really? Please, like any other skill, just start with a small issue. And so that we're all on the same page for instruction's sake, I'm going to ask you, if you would please, to use another person, a third party in your life. Ultimately, this worksheet you can do on any person, place, thing, or event, past, present, future, living or dead, including yourself. But today, for instruction's sake, we're going to ask you to pick a situation that involves another person. When you're doing this worksheet, when you've practiced with it, and you can go to our website, whyagain.com, and go to that download worksheets and download chapter 24 from my book that gives a total explanation of this worksheet in great detail so you can go back over it. But if you're doing a worksheet on yourself or, let's say, an inanimate object, anybody ever get up in the middle of the night and stub your toe on a chair and want to obliterate the chair? Okay. Worksheet on a chair. The chair brings up something from my unconscious, rage. Now, if I function out of rage, I get pretty stupid. You know, we do a workshop called Codependence to Interdependence, and in that workshop, we point out that when we live out of carbon-based memory, there was someone in our lives that we call a power person. The power person was someone who was living out of carbon-based memory, and that person had more power over our lives than we did. And we literally created a non-being self, a self based in false ideas of hostility and fear. And that non-being self became coagulated, as it were, in carbon-based memory, and we look at it as who we are. If we're functioning out of that non-being self, then when we function out of that, we're limited to three behaviors. And just take a look over your life and see what's happened. And those behaviors are all related to stress. And the first behavior, based on your power person dynamic, is when there's no stress, you will automatically do, you've got an automatic decision system in this carbon-based memory system, you'll automatically do whatever you did to get along with your power person. The minute that stress starts to build, you'll shift out of that, and you'll start to do whatever you did to resist and survive with your power person. When you become ultra-stressed, you will automatically do, oftentimes against your own will and choice, exactly what you hated most that your power person did to you. And you'll scratch your head and say, why is it the things I would do, I cannot do? And the things I would not do are what I do. Kind of like a guy named Paul a couple thousand years ago. It's not until we wake up from carbon-based memory that we can change behavior. And it's not until we have the tool of forgiveness that we can dump the contents of carbon-based memory that when we get stressed, it takes over against our own will and choice. And so this is the tool that the man named Yeshua offered. There's nothing religious about it. It's just real pure, simple physics and physiology. Here's how the world works. Here's how your mind works. Here's how you dump content from carbon-based memory. Here's how you open. You know, in the ancient teachings, they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain. They were not talking about a purple curtain in the church. The veil of the temple is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. If you don't ever open that veil and look at and dump the content of your carbon-based memory from your power person dynamics, it'll run your whole life. I don't care if you're 2 or 20 or 2,000 years old. It'll run your life. This is how you go in and access it. This was the technology that the man named Yeshua offered 2,000 years ago. So you've named an object of attention, and then there are two blanks. And those two blanks with dots behind them are a place for you, each time you do a worksheet, to put your initials. So you just pop your initials in there as a reminder that, yes, this person is the person who's my trigger, but it's really about me. So I put my initials in. So my mind, that is carbon-based memory, convinces me of the lie that my trigger, and again, in brackets you can see, you can do a worksheet on them, itself, the situation, any object of attention. So you've named one here, so that they cause my feelings and take me out of love. Now, once again, I remind you that every time you've been taken out of love, you're the one who was there. It's not about them. And in fact, what we found, I had the blessing of getting to do some work with a gentleman named Marcel Vogel about 20 years ago. Marcel was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. And he had the instrumentation in the laboratory with which to take a picture of the high-energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Literally, when you think a thought, you set up a field. That field communicates only to those who are in resonance with that field exactly what you expect of them. And the more emotionalized that thought is, the higher the amplitude of the field, the faster they're coming to dinner, the faster they're going to show up. And so instead of pretending that somebody else is the problem, we want to look at, you know, those words, my trigger, are in italics and bold. There's a reason, because you don't believe that they're your trigger. You believe they're the cause. Harry made me angry. Sally made me sad. Joe made me afraid. And Billy enrages me. Our whole culture's language is all based on projection of what actually belongs to each of us. But if you hold to the idea that this person is the cause of what's happening in you, you will never be able to find and correct that which is happening in you. Your mind will hallucinate a world that does not exist, a world in which they're the problem in your life. Now, most people say, no, I'm grounded enough. I know what's real and what's not. Well, let's put the shoe on the other foot for a minute. How many here have ever been accused of saying something you absolutely never said, of doing something you absolutely never did? Has anybody ever been accused of that? For those, I can't see you guys on the phone here, but everybody in the room put their hand up just now. Now, if I count down, if those who put their hand up would keep your hand up, I'm going to count. And when we get to your number, lower your hand. It's happened to you once, twice, three, four, five, six, seven. No hands down yet. Infinity. Now, they said you said this, and it never happened. They said you did that, and it didn't occur. Are they all liars? Excuse me, no, they are all absolutely telling the truth. They heard you say what they said you said. They saw you do what they said you did, even though it never happened. Oh, wait a minute, Michael, how do you get to that one? Well, there's a thing called reality and actuality. There's what actually goes on in the world. And then when someone comes along and triggers content in carbon-based memory that we've denied and suppressed, the fact of having suppressed it hides the data from us. And now the data cannot be seen truly. And that high energy wave draws somebody in to do a behavior. Has anybody ever gone into somebody's space totally committed to being loving, caring, nurturing, and then found yourself functioning like a mad banshee? What happened? You got close enough to that high energy wave. I like to call it the psychic megaphone, that it triggered something in you. And that mad banshee came forward. So when someone triggers something in you that you're in denial about, here's what happens. Your mind uses that data that you've denied to build your brain's image of them. And they show up in your mind with your problem attached, and you think it's their problem. And you describe what they said, and then you describe what they did, just like you've all had it happen. They're not lying to you. They heard you say those words, though they never came out of your mouth. The body that they saw manufactured in their mind out of what they had denied said the words that they heard. And they think that body in their mind is you, just like you think the body in your mind is somebody else who did it to you again and again and again. And so as long as you hold that they're the cause and not the trigger, you'll do a huge amount of work and you won't get anywhere. Let's use an example. Let's imagine we bring a man from the jungles of South America. This man has never seen anything more complex than a dugout canoe. And we ask him to sit beside a drawbridge on a river and tell us what causes bridges to go up. And he sits there for days, and every time a boat comes along, the bridge goes up, and every time the boat goes away, the bridge goes down. Our friend comes to the obvious conclusion that what? Boats cause bridges to go up, right? Now, if he holds to the mistaken belief that boats cause bridges to go up, what does he have to do? He potentially has to change the direction of every boat in the world, right? It's a lot of work. You ever get really tired of trying to change everybody else so that your carbon-based memory won't serve up what you're holding hidden from yourself? And so the idea of forgiveness is to start to own the output of your own mind instead of pretending it could possibly be caused by anyone else. And as you take ownership, everything starts to shift and change. So my mind, my carbon-based memory, convinces me the lie that my trigger causes my feelings and takes me out of love. And then very briefly, if you would, just describe what happened. What's the situation about? And are you breathing? Notice what just happened with your breath. What happened? Anyone? It stopped. Shut down. Why? The mechanical way that we hide what we don't want to deal with, the mechanical way we suppress what we don't want to deal with is holding the breath. So we're going to invite you to go through, and you'll notice at several germane points in the worksheet, there's a reminder to breathe. We're going to invite you to breathe, to keep your breath moving, because that gives you access to data that is otherwise hidden. So you've described what happened, and then in number 1B, your feelings. And that is, my feelings triggered by this situation. And recognize that all hostility or fear, remember the question that elicited the response of hostility and fear? It was, how many have done what you regret? Hostility and fear makes us stupid. Because 100% of the time, hostility or fear in the human system is a marker for corrupt data. You can't see the truth through your human perceptual apparatus if hostility or fear enters into it. In fact, if you go back 2,000 years ago, they said to the man named Yeshua, what's most important in the law? What he said was this: you must have rachma. That word's been translated as love. But in fact, what he said is, there's a filter in the frontal lobes of your brain called rachma. It's love. You got to keep it active. Otherwise, you will misperceive and project whatever it is you need to be working on. And you'll think your problem is everybody else's problem. You know, I asked earlier about how many have ever taken the geographic cure. And you get to the other end, and the person who picks you up at the airport finishes the sentence, and the person who dropped you off started. How does that happen? When you take the geographic cure, there's a problem. You go along. If you could take the geographic cure and not be there when you got there, things might be different, but you can't do that. You take your whole reality structure and every frequency that is in you with you. And so what we're looking to have you do now is to recognize that if you're doing a worksheet, there's some form of hostility or fear going on in you. And so we want you to describe your feelings in this situation. And if you would, please make sure that the feelings you describe are words that actually describe your emotional condition rather than the thoughts that you have. Oftentimes in our intellectually oriented culture, we substitute thoughts for feelings. And so when you substitute a thought for a feeling, you're out of touch with feelings. You can't do anything with feelings. And so we want to look at what are the feelings that you have around this situation that you're doing the worksheet on. And breathe. Sometimes our feelings are pre-verbal. And so if these are feelings that are pre-verbal, there's a little box there. Just draw a line drawing, a simple line drawing of what your feelings are in this situation. Now, I'm going to ask you, if you would, for a moment to close your eyes. And as you close your eyes, I'm going to ask you to run through a series of feelings. Start out, if you wouldn't, let yourself feel sadness. Go to the feeling of sadness. And notice where in your physiology you feel that sadness. Take a breath and let the sadness go. And then for a moment, go to the feeling of anger. Notice where in your physiology you feel that anger. Take a breath. Let the anger go. And now go to the feeling of fear. Once again, notice where in your physiology you feel the fear. Take a breath and let it go. And now take a very deep cleansing breath and go to the experience of love. Take that energy of love and move it throughout your structure into the place where you felt the anger, the sadness, the fear. And then come back to this moment. And I'm going to ask this question of our live audience here rather than on the phone so that we can keep the phone lines clear. How did you feel each feeling that you just felt? What did you do to feel a feeling? And then what did you do to shift from one feeling to another? Anyone? Memory. What did you do with memory? You thought about something. So you had a thought about something in your memory system. So in order to move from feeling to feeling to feeling, you changed thoughts. What does that make feelings? Feelings are nothing but shadows of thoughts. They're markers for thoughts. The corrupt ones have feelings connected with hostility and fear. The true ones have feelings connected with love. Now, I'm going to ask you to do something that's unique in our culture today. I'm going to ask you to look at the feeling you just had in this experience that you're writing about on your worksheet and identify specifically the thought you think in order to feel that feeling. If you're still projecting, you think Charlie caused you the problem, Harry caused you the problem. What we're going to ask you to do is bring it back home and identify what thought you think to feel the feeling that you put down in number 1B. And then, taking another deep breath, what's your punishment thought? Or a lot of people don't want to own that they could ever possibly punish. They just say, well, I just want to stay away from that person. But you know, if you look, the most drastic punishment you can do to somebody is to abandon them. Avoidance, it's just another form of punishment. But take a look at, what's your punishment thought? What is it you want to do to them in that situation? Now, if you've got hostility and fear, your mind's working with corrupt data, that means your mind's lying to you. That means your mind isn't telling you the truth. Most human beings, or so-called human beings, live in blockage of truth. You made me angry, you made me sad, you made me afraid, you made me miss my appointment, you made me late, it's all your fault. And that's a language of projection. That's a language that pretends what's going on inside of me must be caused by something outside of me. The most disempowering thought on the planet is that one. And so when someone lives in blame of someone else, they literally give away their power. And they live, then, in a state called blockage of truth. Blockage of truth means I have a reality in my mind that shows me that it's all your fault, and I'm sticking to my story. I don't care what the truth is. I don't care if I've been through this 100 times with 100 different people. It's all your fault. The antidote for blockage of truth is love of truth. And so, in number 2, I choose to love truth. So I choose to love truth more than my own opinion. And I willingly go through the physical, mental, and emotional symptoms of healing. What this means is that if you hold corrupt data in you, if you hold any form of hostility or fear, and one of the things that we've talked about in our earlier sessions, for those who have not been on the call the last 4 weeks, is that when we put an energy into the system of hostility or fear, we're putting an energy in that doesn't belong. In the ancient Aramaic language, putting an energy into your field that doesn't belong in the human field is called sin. It's got nothing to do with your identity. It is not what you are. You were never in the Aramaic. It was never planned that you would identify yourself as that. It was simply telling us about a particular quality of energy and its influence on our physiology. In one of the earlier sessions, and by the way, for those that weren't here, you can go back and on our website on whyagain.com, our media page, and you can download the previous four calls if you want to, along with a lot of other materials, including our book. It's free online in several languages. But you want to look at responsibility here, and when you put an energy that's off the mark, sin is actually in Aramaic, an archery term. When you fire at the target and you miss the target, the scorekeeper yells, sin, you're off the mark. Like, as in take another shot, not become identified and become one. And so when you recognize that your energy is off the mark, that energy literally produces in your physiology, wherever it lands, a chemical. And the chemical is of the quality of your thoughts. So when Dr. Dean this morning talked about thoughts, what we found, or actually there's a really incredible piece of work done by Bruce Lipton, who's a cell biologist, and what Bruce is showing is that when you think a thought, you literally produce a molecule called a neuropeptide in your body. And that molecule circulates around until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. And that receptor site receives the cell, the neuropeptide, and the cell replicates the neuropeptide chemically, and you're living with the chemistry of your thoughts. In the ancient Aramaic, when they said the wages of sin is death, there was nothing about a theological threat there. God's going to get you. It has to do with, this is physiology, folks. If you put an energy that doesn't belong, you put chemistry into your cell, which is going to destroy your cellular structure. All death is suicide. All disease is self-inflicted. I like the acronym for sin, self-inflicted nonsense. It's time for us to put an end to it. So the symptoms of healing look like when you start to open this veil, everything that's ever gone into your structure from your life experience and from the generations. And when they said the sins of the father would be passed yea into three and four generations, again, that wasn't a threat. God's going to get you for what your parents did or what Adam did. That was simple physiology. Literally, your body-mind unit is a device that stores every frequency that comes to it. And every frequency that is stored there has an impact upon every cell in the structure because it is stored holographically in every cell, including the sperm and the egg. And so you receive genetically what your family system buys as a belief system and the energies they engage in. Anybody here ever have a child? Does anybody with a child notice that having a child is like having your unconscious mind hang out in true living color and Dolby sound? Everything you never dealt with, they do. Why? Because they're out of the same genetic material. They have your unresolved thoughts in them. They have your unconscious feelings in them. And if you decide to clean it up, you can liberate not only them, not only yourself, but the previous generations who put it in there in the first place. You open literally the energetic window for yourself and them all to be freed from those qualities of energy. It's called forgiveness. And it's not Dr. Feelgood, because to start to open the veil of your temple means that you start to experience everything that's there. Perhaps some of those dynamics have been suppressed in your family bloodline for 1,000 generations. Remember the story about Moses? He wandered in the desert for 40 years. Do you remember how they got out of the desert into the promised land? He said the old generation had to die off. That didn't mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. The root of the word generation is genari. It means cause. All the old causes held in your mind had to be removed in order for you to be freed from unconsciousness. That's what they were talking about. And so on a physical level, going back through those old energies, on a physical level, it looks like any kind of physical energy symptom you've ever had, and low energy. On a mental level, it looks like any kind of negative thought and confusion. On an emotional level, it looks like any kind of negative feeling and depression. That's what healing looks like. It's not Dr. Feelgood. Most people would rather take a pill. I don't want to face this. I don't want to deal with this. But symptomatically, that's what happens when those energies start to move. And if you are committed to staying with the active presence of love, The simple presence of love will dissolve every frequency that you hold in you that is unlike love. But you got to open the veil. So let's go on to the next step. In number three, now, has anybody here got someone who knows how to give you the look? Anybody got some? Okay, you know how to give the look too, even. All right. So let's get somebody who knows how to give you the look. Let's take any one of you that put your hand up. We're going to bring your person right up here in front of the room. We're going to get them to turn around, pardon me, and give the whole room the look.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Now, notice that everybody in the room isn't going to go berserk when your person is up here giving the look, like you go berserk. Now, you've been blaming that look for the berserkness in you your whole life long. But if that look were the cause of your berserkness, everybody in the room would have the same berserkness. But notice they don't. Some people laugh, some grin, some are entertained, some are bored. Everybody's got a different reality. You cannot enter into conscious co-creation until you're willing to be responsible for every frequency in you, every energy, every thought in you. Now, if it's true that it's not the look that causes it, but it's something in your field, do you think that if you could contact and change what was in your field that causes your trauma or your pain when somebody gives you the look, that you might be able to be free from their control? How many of you have ever been controlled by a look or a little noise that comes from the throat in front of your power person? Okay. It's not that that does it, or it would do the same with everyone. There's something in you that you need to identify and change in order to change that dynamic. Guess what it is? You hold for that person a goal, and they're not achieving it for you. That is your problem. And when they will not achieve your goal, it is the non-achievement of that goal that your mind uses to hook into your hostility and fear, because you think you're not going to get what you want. Carbon-based memory says, I've got to have this to survive. And if carbon-based memory says, I've got to have this to survive, and the person I think I have to get it from won't give it to me, then I go into survival, which usually is linked to hostility or fear. And now my mind is using my hostility or fear to generate my perceptual output, and my perceptual system is now darkened. I have no light there. So when I have any circumstance or situation where I have any form of hostility or fear, I want to look at the goal that I hold for my object of attention, first and foremost. So step three is, I want number 1A, that is whoever you named as the object of attention, two, and then in positive words, you want to express what it was you want from them. This process will not work with, I don't want them to be mean to me anymore. I don't want them to look at me that way anymore. I don't want them to use the voice on me anymore. Does somebody know how to use the voice on you? Okay. So not wanting that won't do it. What is it that I want from them? Well, the person who speaks to me harshly, I want them to speak to me lovingly, gently, and respectfully. This process only works with a constructive goal. And so in number three, if you look at your object of attention, number 1A, what is it you wanted from them? And make sure that the word not or don't or any negative word like that is not in your sentence. Because if it is, the process will not be as effective. You really want to look at what you want. If someone's speaking to me harshly, I want them to treat me lovingly and gently. If someone's treating me unfairly, I want them to treat me fairly. So what is it that you want from your object of attention? That's number three. And then number four. Now, everything we've talked about so far can have a tendency to resonate some of that old carbon-based hostility or fear. But the key to healing is two things have to happen. You have to be able to access the hostility and fear, and at the same time, keep love conscious, active, and present. Love is the mind of the Creator. You know, when it's said to be of like mind with Christ, there's nothing religious about it. In fact, in Aramaic, the word Christ is an office. It's not a person. It's a state of being. And so when we link to that mind of love, we are literally, our birthright is to link to the mind of God. That's the only sane mind in the universe. In fact, there's A philosopher named Schopenhauer said there's only one functioning mind in the universe. And it's not the mind of your body. It's not your carbon-based memory. And so to hear, really, truly connect to the mind of love in you. So number four, I choose to reconnect to my original being instead of my upset. So just take a minute and go back to that connection to love. And in any situation where there's hostility or fear, stop and go back and reconnect with that source. Elsewise, you'll suffer the effects of being disconnected. And at this stage, I like to tell the story about the rose and the butterfly. And the rose and the butterfly, we get to meet Ichinigo, they meet, they fall in love, they have a wonderful relationship. And one day, the butterfly up and flies away. The rose, knowing that the love of the butterfly is the most important thing in its life, uproots itself to give chase. What's going to happen to that rose? Going to die. Why is it going to die? It's going to die because it made something more important than being connected to its source. If you ever make anything more important than staying connected to your source, which is love, remember, newborn, your original being's love, if you make anything more important than being connected to that, guess what? Nothing else is important. You can forget the whole game. And so I want to reconnect to love, and then I have a reality based in carbon-based memory in hostility or fear around this situation. There's some interesting Harvard research that says in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity, the max amount of information that goes into the conscious awareness is 9 bits. 9 bits out of 10,000. It's been estimated that in the same time frame, there are approximately 20 trillion bits of data potentially available from our environment. So we live in a 20 trillion bit world. We have 10,000 brain cells firing. We get to see 9 bits. It better be the right 9 bits. If the 9 bits that you're seeing is based in hostility or fear, you're in trouble. And so what we want to do at this stage, pardon me, is to collapse the hostile or fearful reality. How do you collapse a reality in the mind? Well, here's the crux of forgiveness from the Aramaic. In the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shebag, and it literally translates to cancel. What do you cancel? You cancel the goal that caused your mind to link to hostility or fear in the first place in order to clean up your perceptual mind and get back to intelligence, in order to get back to human beingness. You know, people say, oh, you know, these atrocities that go on in the world, how could any human being ever do that? Excuse me, no human being could ever do any of those atrocities we hear about. These are non-beings functioning out of hostility and fear. And then any atrocity can happen that's stored in carbon-based memory. The idea is to recapture our being. And to do that, you've got to collapse what occupies the 9-bit mind, because you can only see what's in your 9-bit mind. And if it's occupied with your projection about them, you can't see what it is in you that you need to heal. So the first order of business, and this seems totally intuitively backward to the non-being mind, is there something wonderful I want? And when I don't get it, I go into hostility or fear. So my solution is to start off by canceling what I want, canceling my goal. So number five A, in order to collapse my false reality, be liberated from my hostility and fear, and get back to the truth about me and my object of attention, I cancel, that is in Aramaic, shebag, my goal for number 1A2. So you bring your answer from number 3 down to number 5. This goal is literally a driver that causes your mind to organize its data in a particular way. If the data that fills your perceptual mind comes from hostility or fear, then you'll notice that you get pretty stupid when that happens. For those who have come in the last few minutes, we started out asking the question, how many of you have ever done something you regret, and then asked you to identify what you were feeling when you did what you regretted? And everybody's answer is always some form of hostility or fear. Because when we're in hostility or fear, we're working with corrupt data, and we're pretty stupid. We don't get to do our highest and best. And so by canceling the goal, you collapse the output of the 9-bit mind. That's the only object here. It doesn't mean you don't deserve it. It doesn't mean you don't want it. It means that as long as you use that goal to link you to hostility or fear, you can't live in love. You can't live in human beingness. So you must collapse the goal to get back to being. And so that's step number 5A. Then 5B, there's a second part to it. When you start recognizing that you have a 9-bit mind, max, the actual laboratory stats were 7 plus or minus 2, that you have a 9-bit mind, and you live in a 20 trillion bit world, and you have 1,000 generations stored in you, how long do you suppose it's going to take to work through 1,000 generations of desert, of unconscious? It's not going to happen in the next million years, unless you have a helper. In the Aramaic language, there was a helper that was spoken of, and it was called Ruka Dekutcha. The words have been translated from the Aramaic text to the Greek as the Holy Spirit. In Aramaic, the words Ruka Dekutcha speak of a feminine elemental force in us that by definition undoes the effect of our errors and teaches us the truth. We could say the superprocessor. The Greek teachings, wherever they can translate it as hostile or fearful based, will do so. And so we hear a threat that's offered to people that the denial of the Holy Spirit is the unforgivable sin. What it actually said in Aramaic was the denial or blaspheming Ruka Dekutcha, the superprocessor, that which can heal you, leaves you in unforgiveness. You can't change your mind if you don't have the processing power. So this step number 5B from the Aramaic is I invite Ruka Dekutcha, and we leave it blank, whatever term you choose to use, higher power oftentimes is used, to assist me in, to incline me toward healing, to restore me to my original nature, love, to assist me in keeping love present, and to help me see and own the inner, deeper, hidden, and projected parts of myself. So in regard to the situation you're working on, those who are on the phone and those who are here in our audience, if you would please look at the goal you had in number 5 and cancel it, and whatever you would call that higher power, invite it to go to work in you. Take a deep breath, cancel the goal, and just invite that power to go to work. And of course, breathe. Everybody out there in telephone land breathing? Good. Now, as you do that, get your pen and go to number 6. How do you feel as you cancel that goal and as you invite that power to go to work in you? And then, if you look at the situation number 1, how does it look to you now? What are you seeing about that situation? And breathe. And without opening the phone lines once again, for time's sake, for those who are in the audience, if you look at your answer in number 1 and your answer in number 6, the questions are the same. They're worded slightly differently, but it's basically the same question. Is your answer in number 6 the same as it was in number 1? Anyone in the audience, is your answer the same in 6 as it was in 1? No? I see a lot of head shaking. No. Now, if you look at your answer in number 1, you'll notice that generically, you each wrote about them, right? In number 6, who did you write about? Yourself. This is called opening the veil of the temple. Notice you just found out something about yourself you didn't know. You were unconscious of that. This is how forgiveness works. It opens the veil. It shows you what's in your unconscious. And remember, to move from the desert to the promised land, you've got to open the unconscious in whatever area, and in particular in relationship to hub and your hub business. If you have blocks that say, my family bloodline isn't allowed to be successful, my family bloodline always has conflict, my family bloodline always has trouble no matter